from the AT&T Podcast Studio. This is Long Story Short. I'm Sean Witt, the Audience Development Director at Oklahoma Watch. We're a statewide non-for-profit news organization that specializes in investigative reporting. You're listening to our weekly podcast, which lets you hear directly from our journalists as they provide deeper insight into their recently published stories. Reporter Paul Moneys has been watching the first half of the legislative session, which saw a new budget process used by the Senate and leadership elections on the GOP side. Paul, how has this session been different from the last year?
Yeah, if you kind of rewind to last year this time, things got really bogged down over some issues with how to fund private schools either through a voucher or a tax credit. There was a lot of discord between the Senate and the House on how to get that resolved. That took most of session last year. And in fact, they kind of had to do a little bit extra time in a concurrent special session to get their work done. It's quite a bit different this year. We've had, obviously, the first major floor deadline pass, which the bills have to pass out of their chamber. So we've already done the committee work on the original bills on that side. And we've also at least seen a little bit more kind of working together this year.
Tell us more about the Senate's new budget transparency efforts.
Yeah, so this is an effort by Senate Pro Tem Greg Treat. He basically said that, look, the way it went down last year, he wasn't happy with. It was all last minute rushed, which typically happens a lot of times anyway. But he instituted a new process. He rolled it out in the fall before session started. He basically committed to his chairman for appropriations and budget subcommittees to kind of come up with a resolution to be voted on at the halfway point. And they did that last week. The Senate put its whole budget process together and put its proposal out there. And now it will start negotiations with the House on that budget.
So the GOP supermajorities in both chambers also elected their leader for 2025. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So House Speaker Charles McCaul is term limited. And so he will no longer be House Speaker next year. And so and the same goes in the Senate. Senate Pro Tem Greg Treat is also term limited. And so internally, both Republicans on either chamber got together and voted for a new a speaker designate. And then on the House side, that is Cal Hilbert. He's a Republican from Bristow. And then on the Senate side, it is the floor leader right now, Greg McCourtney. He will be Speaker Pro Tem designate. Now, this is just kind of a holding thing. They basically formally vote on them after the November election. So presumably they will both get re-elected to enter positions, and then the House and Senate will come together after the elections and their kind of organizational day to formally vote for those two people to be new leaders in the 2025 session.
You've been monitoring some bills on the state's law that targets apparent discrimination against oil and gas companies by financial firms. What's still alive?
Yeah, so if you remember, this was a big deal last year. It was a law that was actually passed in 2021 and went into a pretty heavy effect last year. There was some issues with implementation that came up. You know, Senate has met in between in the interim to kind of get some tweaks to fix the law. There's also been some pending stuff that's left over from last year that would expand that law, too. And so now there's a couple of bills that are still alive. They made it out of committee and off the floor. One would actually take the applicability to local governments out of there. They had some issues with Stillwater and getting some financing from one of the companies on the banned company list. And so that's gotten taken out, and it's gone through and will go to the House now. And then on the other side, they're also going to expand this to not only oil and gas, but people who are perceived to discriminate their companies against oil and timber and agriculture interests. And that's still alive as well.
Scores of bills were filed before session on medical marijuana. What made it past the first big deadline?
Yeah, so on the medical marijuana side, there's been a lot of talk about the enforcement, the illicit market that's out there, the grows that are going on that are kind of making way more than what Oklahoma medical patients could consume. And so there's a lot of effort on the enforcement side, but also on the patient side, there's still a lot of bills alive now that would make some differences in terms of packaging. There's one that's still going on that's alive that would basically force sellers to put it in design packages rather than having loose marijuana. That's gotten a lot of pushback, not only from people who are worried about the waste for that on the packaging, but also about how it wouldn't be much different than anyone because they would just open up the packages at the stores anyway and sell it that way in more of a bulk form. And so there's an issue on that side. And then obviously there's some more things to do with how patients keep their cards. And then there's still issues impending with businesses and getting licenses and some more strict kind of prohibitions on how you renew the licenses and transfer them.
One of my personal favorites, government transparency. What are the latest on some of those bills?
Yeah, so there's a few that are still out there. The biggest one that people are talking about is probably one that would actually make some changes at the Oklahoma Corporation Commission. That is a 3-member statewide elected board. They find it kind of hard to kind of talk outside of open meetings to kind of formulate just kind of regular administrative policy side of things. And they meet a lot less than they used to. So they've figured out that, hey, maybe we can maybe have the corporation commissioners talk about stuff outside of rate setting and outside of kind of the main job they do. But as long as they notify people within 5 days and put it on the website that they talked with two commissioners, which would be a quorum in normal times in a meeting, there's some changes to that that could be coming. Now, a long time corporation commissioner Bob Anthony is not happy about those changes. He says there needs to be more transparency in meetings and not just have these outside the kind of meetings discussions that would be out there under this bill. That actually, interestingly, unless it's not in either the Open Meeting Act or the Open Records Act, that's under the part of the statute that covers a corporation commission. So there's worries about having that similar kind of freedom for other 3-member commissions and boards. The top one there would be county commissioners, which we have a long history of past scandals of, 40, 50 years ago. And so now there's a lot of talk, well, maybe this is kind of a trial effort to kind of see how the corporation commission does this. And maybe they can expand it if it works well to other 3-member commissions and boards like county commissioners. But that would be a big step for people to take, given that some of the past corruption we've seen in decades past in the county commissioner side.
Any other bills that are kind of you keeping an eye on?
Yeah, there's kind of a handful that are more interesting to me just personally in terms of just kind of tracking lots of things with incentives. There's one that would expand or kind of copy the state's quality job program, which is a job rebate program that's been in effect for more than 30 years now. It would actually expand that and have a different program to set up for professional sports teams. So the Thunder right now qualifies under several expansions to its own the regular quality jobs program. This would expand that to allow the 5 major sports leagues, NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, and Major League Soccer. If there's any expansion teams that we might be interested in Oklahoma, this would be an extra thing that they could look at. That is a bill by John Echols, the floor leader in the House. There's also a couple more that have to do with possibly looking at starting a new institute at University of Oklahoma to kind of look at civic engagement. And that's kind of a model that's been passed in several other states, including Arizona State, Tennessee, Texas, kind of have a separate civic engagement school inside their university to kind of study that and kind of expand the idea of talking and civic engagement across all ideological lines.
Thanks, Paul. You can read all of Paul's coverage on Oklahoma's state government and social policy issues on our website, oklahomawatch.org. Keaton Ross covers criminal justice and democracy for Oklahoma Watch. In his latest story, he broke down where criminal justice legislation stands at the legislature's unofficial halfway point. Keaton, what bills have caught your attention?
There are several bills relating to domestic violence and shoplifting, bills that would increase the range a sentence court can hand down. There's House Bill 3694 by Representative John George that would lower the felony threshold for shoplifting. There's another bill, Senate Bill 1470 by Greg Treat, the Senate pro tem, that would increase the calculating period that prosecutors can combine several thefts, basically combining several different thefts into one offense to raise that from a misdemeanor to a felony. That bill would raise that from 90 days to a year. So that has advanced. And then also those bills on domestic violence, there's a few that would increase the range of punishment a judge can hand down. So that seems to be one of the major trends, is just a lot of focus on those two issues.
Why do the bill authors argue that these measures are necessary?
So a lot of the argument centers on a point of view that these crimes have increased or are not going down, and that in order to deter that tougher penalties are needed.
Is there any data that supports a significant increase in shoplifting or other kinds of theft?
So in regards to shoplifting, when the bill came up for debate on the House floor, the John George the author of the bill, who's a former Oklahoma City police officer and leader of the Oklahoma City Fraternal Order of Police. One of his main arguments was that since State Question 780 took effect, that lowered the felony threshold for shoplifting, that those offenses have tripled or nearly tripled. A deeper look at the data shows that's not true. It's just you might get that idea going on the OSBI's crime data website, but there's a discrepancy there because law enforcement agencies have been transitioning to a new crime reporting system. So there hasn't been that kind of increase in regards to shoplifting and theft since 780 took effect.
Is there anything out there about domestic violence?
So in regards to domestic violence, it did peak. There was a pretty significant increase during the onset of the coronavirus pandemic in 2020. In 2021, those numbers were pretty high. I believe it was a 20-year high. And we did some reporting on that a few years ago. That's come down just a little bit from the pandemic, but still quite high. And compared to other states, Oklahoma consistently ranks, you know, top 1, 2, 3 in domestic violence. So that has certainly been a big issue facing the state for a while now.
When the measures came up for a vote on the House floor, did they receive any kind of resistance? Was there any kind of debate about them?
There was from in regards to the shoplifting bill, the domestic violence bill was pretty widely supported. But in that shoplifting bill, there was some pushback from a handful of Democratic lawmakers who had concerns that one, the idea that shoplifting has tripled since 780 took effect is not necessarily true. And two, concerns that this sort of bill could have a not ideal impact on the state's prison population, that has come down pretty significantly since 780 took effect. So those were the two main concerns there.
Over the past decade, we've seen some pretty significant progress on criminal justice reform here in Oklahoma. Are there any reform measures garnering any support this year?
There are a few. There's not sort of a widespread push on some of those reform efforts. There were several measures introduced that didn't get a hearing or didn't get much progress. But there are a few notable ones. There's another bill from Greg Treat, known as the Domestic Violence Survivors Act, that would basically allow someone to argue in court that they were a victim of domestic violence or another sexual abuse or something as they were growing up that impacted them negatively and could present evidence of that and potentially receive a lower sentence. There are a few exceptions. I believe that sex offenses are exempt from this provision as it's currently written, but that would allow domestic violence survivors to argue for a lighter sentence. And there's also another bill that was notable that would allow someone on probation to petition for early release. There's been fair amount of conversation about, you know, the fees associated with probation and sort of the restrictions of it and that sort of thing. And that if someone's, you know, complied with everything they're supposed to, they ought to have a chance to get off of probation early. So that's another bill that has moved forward at this point.
You previously reported on a bill that would institute a death penalty moratorium. Is that measure still alive?
That bill did not get a hearing, and it's at this point not alive.
What are some of the next steps for bills that have passed through the chamber?
So right now, over the next few weeks or so, legislature is going to be doing committee work again with bills from the opposing chambers. So House committees will be hearing Senate bills, Senate committees will be hearing House bills. And then the focus will again turn to the full House and Senate. Sometimes bills can there can be disagreements on language or certain provisions of it, and it'll go to something called a conference committee where they'll try to work that stuff out. Sometimes bills die there and don't get to the governor's desk, but the final step there is bills going to the governor's desk and either being vetoed or signed into law.
Well, thanks, Keaton. You can read all of Keaton's coverage on our website, oklahomawatch.org. While you're there, be sure to sign up for his free weekly newsletter, Democracy Watch. I'm here with Paul and Keaton, and we're going to have a little bit of a roundtable discussion discussing the legislature's midway point through the session. Gentlemen, there's an effort out there to change the way judges are selected. Tell us a little bit more about those bills under consideration.
Yeah, so there's right now there's a Senate Joint Resolution 34 by Senator Julie Daniels that would basically put to the vote of the people to get rid of what the existing judicial nominating commission. And that is kind of an independent commission that comes up with possible judges. And then they basically choose three, and the governor chooses one of those candidates. People have been saying, especially Republicans have been saying for years, that this is not a very transparent process. It allows the Bar Association too much control over judicial appointments, and that they want the legislature to be more involved. And so SJR 34 would kind of get rid of that JNC commission. And basically allow the governor to appoint all judges with confirmation right now by just the Senate. But House Speaker Charles McCall has said that he would like to amend that to include the House as well.
Discussion and debate on a tax cut proposal dominated the first half of the legislation. Are there any topics you would expect to renew the focus of the second half, Keaton?
Yeah, a few. There's one issue that I just wrote a newsletter about on state level immigration law. Of course, there's Texas that has been battling in court to be able to enforce its law that would allow law enforcement to arrest someone, migrants that are in the country illegally. And charge them with a misdemeanor on the first offense and a felony potentially on the second offense. Last week, Attorney General Gintner Drummond and House Speaker Charles McCall issued statements saying that they want a similar law in Oklahoma. That Texas law is still being litigated back and forth in the courts. Last week, it looked like the Supreme Court had given the go-ahead on that, and then that was brought back to an appeals court again, so that Texas is not enforcing that law right now. But that's one issue that we could see some legislation brought forth that's similar to the Texas law. And I'd expect that while the legislature passed the grocery tax earlier this session, that Governor Stitt and Speaker McCall will continue to try to get some movement on a personal income tax cut.
Yeah, now I would say on the tax cut front, obviously, the pro tem Greg Treat has been pretty steadfast, and the Senate will not take up any more major tax cuts. He did kind of qualify that with the major. So we might see some other, like Keaton said, some other stuff possibly around the edges, but maybe not as far as both the governor and the House Speaker might want to go on the tax cut front.
So the election cycle is about to really get ramped up here, and we have candidate filing next week. What do you guys see with that? Is there any active legislation that affects Oklahoma voters out there?
Yeah, well, candidate filing will be 3 days next week, and we're kind of taking a look at that. It'll be half the Senate will be up, including a couple of other Senate seats that are off cycle than the regular times. And then the whole House will be up, obviously, for election. The only statewide race that's actually going to be on the ballot this year will be the Corporation Commissioner. Longtime Corporation Commissioner Bob Anthony has finally hit the term limits. He's been more than 30 years in office, kind of qualified under the last term limits bill, I think in 2010, that he had another couple of terms still going. And so got in under the wire on that. But there will be a new Corporation Commissioner elected this year. We've already seen former Secretary of State and former pro tem Ryan Bingman put his hat into the ring for that. We'll be looking for who else might be in that. And, of course, we'll be looking at if there's any Democrats might file for that statewide post as well. Keaton's probably talked a little bit more about some of the other things that are going on this cycle too.
So, yeah, as far as bills that would affect the voting process itself, there were a few bills filed at the beginning of session that would be pretty far reaching, like requiring voters to re-register in 2025, that sort of thing. Those bills didn't get a hearing and are dead. There is one election related bill that has gotten some traction and a fair amount of opposition that would ban ranked choice voting at the statewide level and as well as the municipal level. Some of that pushback being that, it could save municipalities money, could bring more people into the election process, that sort of thing. That bill has passed the House and is now on to the Senate. As far as this cycle, this was a bill that passed last year, but will take effect this year, raising poll worker pay from about $100 to $110 up to, I believe, $225 per day that precinct officials work. It'll be interesting to see how that affects, interest in working on election day, precinct staffing, that sort of thing.
If the legislature wants to modify the state constitution, it has to get final approval from voters. Are there any pending resolutions out there that it could appear on November's general election ballot?
There are a few. Paul mentioned earlier, of course, that resolution with the judicial selection process that would have to appear before voters. There are a few others. There's one that would allow a legislator to be employed as a teacher after leaving office. Right now, there's sort of a waiting period that resolution would do away with that. There's another that would allow pardon and parole board there to be alternate members of the pardon and parole board. If a member has to recuse themselves or there's a tie, that would settle that tie and clarify that a tie isn't necessarily a no vote.
And of course, we've got kind of pending. They're still yet to collect signatures, but there's one out there on minimum wage, raising the minimum wage for the state. That is kind of still a little bit tied up in the courts. The courts gave approval. Looks like most recently the state chamber has asked for a rehearing on some of that. And so that is still not yet collecting signatures, pending some legal challenges that are still going on. But that could appear on the ballot too if they successfully get that through.
Finally, my favorite subject. Do either of you expect a special session this year? Didn't we set a record last year?
We did. I kind of lost count myself. We had a concurrent one at the end of the session last year to kind of finish up some business that was kind of hanging out from some of the discord during the session last year. And then the governor himself called, I think it was maybe up to three special sessions after the session. I kind of lost count myself, but there was several things that he wanted on tax cut fronts that did not get passed and through. And so I don't know if that strategy, given the fact that nothing happened in those special sessions last year after the regular session, if that's kind of a winning strategy for the governor to keep doing. But it definitely keeps things at the forefront, and it's an election year. So, I'd hate to say anything is possible, but I think the chances are a little bit less than they were last year. Usually in election years and years past, they like to kind of project the idea to voters that they're competent and can finish their business during the regular session. So there may be less of an incentive to do that this year.
Yeah. And of course, as far as the election cycle, if you have the June primary in mid to late June and then the session ending in late May, and, if someone has a primary challenger, would ideally be out there campaigning and trying to secure that vote. So, maybe not as likely, but you never know.
Yeah, so I guess that is a no and a no. So let's cross our fingers and hope that that's the case. Well, thanks, gentlemen. You can read all of Keaton and Paul's continued legislative coverage at oklahomawatch.org. You've been listening to Long Story Short, a weekly podcast that helps you get deeper into the investigative stories reported by Oklahoma Watch, which you can find on the web at oklahomawatch.org. This podcast was made possible by a grant from the Kirkpatrick Foundation, for which we are grateful. For Oklahoma Watch, I'm Sean Witt. Thanks for listening.